For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good morning, everyone. I want to share some teachings this morning from the 12th century Chinese Soto or Zhaodong teacher Hongzhi Zhangzhui, a predecessor to Dogen, the Japanese Soto founder in the 1200s. This is from a book I did a while ago, Cultivating the Empty Field. I'll read this whole section and then I'm going to talk about it. All Buddhas and every ancestor, without exception, testify that they all arrive at this refuge, where the three times cease and the 10,000 changes are silenced. Straight ahead, unopposed by the smallest atom, the inherently illumined Buddha spirit subtly penetrates the original source. When recognized and realized exhaustively, this spirit shares itself and responds to situations. The gates sparkle, and all beings behold the gleaming. Then they understand that from within this place, fulfilled self flows out. The hundreds of grass tips all around never are imposed as my causes and conditioning. The whole body from head to foot proceeds smoothly. So I've been talking a lot about our response to the situations of the world and the difficulties and sadness of the world and some of the specifics of that, of course, to our own lives, but also the situations in the world of suffering, climate damage and racism and sexism and all of that. But I want to come back to where that comes from in our practice, in our sitting. So Hongzhi says, and he's speaking from this place of deep settling, all Buddhas and every ancestor, without exception, testify that they all arrive at this refuge where the three times, past, present, and future, cease and the 10,000 changes are silenced. So he's talking about this place that we all touch in Zazen, whether or not we recognize it or realize it or feel it. In some sense, we are in communion with this place, this refuge, and there are various formal practices of taking refuge in the Dharma, in this reality, and in Buddha, this awakening, and in Sangha, the community of how this is shared. But he says this refuge where the three times, that's past, present, and future, cease and the 10,000 changes are silenced. So this is interesting. I've also been talking about time and thinking about time, as I do all the time. And there's some sense in which when we touch this place, time ceases. And I've been mostly talking about this in terms of inhabiting time. So it's not that there is no time there, but it feels like that. From this place, we are not caught up in time. The changes are silenced. So the issue that Hongzhi is raising here has to do with change and with self and the fulfilled self. And so, of course, basic to Buddhism is this idea of emptiness and this idea of change. And, of course, there's impermanence in everything. But none of these teachings are, you know, none of these teachings are absolute that we can hold on to. All of them are ways of seeing. And the ultimate way of seeing goes beyond any particular way of seeing. But when we, so Hongzhi says here that all the Buddhas and all the ancestors, all of those beings who have kept alive this practice so that we can do it here this morning, they've testified what they have seen, what they have provided for us is this refuge, this opportunity to sit upright, to be present, to face the wall of our reality. And when we do this, it's as if the 3 times or the 10 times or the movements of time, of course, are always going on, but it's as if they're silence. We can settle, we can be present. And there's a great refuge there, there's a great relief there. We have this opportunity to settle and calm. And, you know, we might want to stop there in this silence. And this meditation teaching that Hongzhi is famous for sometimes is called silent illumination or serene illumination. But he doesn't stop there. We take refuge there. We are nourished in this settling. And then he says, straight ahead, unopposed by the smallest atom, the inherently illumined Buddha spirit subtly penetrates the original source. What's that about? So that in a lot of, you know, this is, I don't know if Nagarjuna talks about the source ever. This is something that comes into Chan in Chinese Zen and is influenced by Taoism. And this idea of the source appears in a lot of Chan, Chinese Zen, and in our lineage, Shuto Sekito, who wrote the Sandokai, the Harmony of Difference and Sameness, that we chant sometimes, talks about the spiritual source that shines clearly in the light, and then the branching streams flow on in the dark. And that's kind of what Hongzhi is talking about here, that rhythm, that pattern. What is this source? Well, what it's not is some creator deity up there who started things at some point in the past historically. This is not the source as is usually imagined in terms of Western religion. This is, he says, penetrates the original source. This is, well, like in the old koan, the recommendation to see your face before your parents were born. What is your original source right now? This is like the source, actually my name, Taigen, the characters mean ultimate source. And that's the source, like the source of a spring in the mountains. There's this poem I've talked about often by the great Chinese poet Wang Wei that includes the line, follow the stream back to the source and sit and wait for the time when clouds arise. So our practice is to see thoughts and feelings arise. And we can sometimes become quiet and silent enough to see, oh, here it comes. There's a sensation, a sound, a feeling, a twinge in my shoulder, an ache in my lower back, a thought of something that happened yesterday. We can see these clouds arise. how do we find this original source? So this source is not something that happened 6,000 or 6 million years ago. This source is happening right now. Straight ahead, unopposed by the smallest atom, the inherently illumined Buddha spirit subtly penetrates the original source. When we settle this deeply, we have the opportunity to see our life arising right now. So, you know, most of the time in a period of zazen on a Sunday morning, this isn't something we, you know, recognize particularly, even though this is actually what's happening, Hongzhi is telling us, on some level. Maybe sitting for a day or a few days, or if we do regular, you know, if we sit regularly every day or several days a week, we start to feel this. If we do this over time, this settling, this sparkling at the source. But then Hongzhi goes further. He says, when recognized and realized exhaustively, the spirit shares itself and responds to situations. So this is not about figuring out or understanding some description of the ultimate, or of reality, or of, you know, enlightenment, or, you know, one of those words. This is some process that is ongoing in our practice. But it includes this arriving at this refuge, where it seems like all these the 3 times or the 10 times or the various ways of describing the changes are silenced. You know, and this requires some devotion to this practice of settling, of sitting, facing the wall, facing ourselves, facing the world, facing our stories about the world and about ourselves. When recognized and realized exhaustively, so it takes some time to recognize and realize this. And there's no end to recognizing and realizing this. But then this spirit shares itself and responds to situations. The point of this is not, you know, again, to figure out some understanding, but to respond to the situations of our life, of the world. And then he goes on to say, the gates sparkle and all beings behold the gleaming. So many people here have had the experience of, you know, sitting regularly, and then even if you don't notice some difference in your life, you know, your friends may, your family may, other people around you might notice, oh, you know, what are you doing? How come, you know, you seem a little different? So we don't exactly sit for ourselves. Of course, that too, but we respond to situations. We are connected with everything and everyone we've ever known or will know. We respond to situations. The gates sparkle and all beings behold the gleaming. And then Hongzhi says, then they understand that from within this place, fulfilled self flows out. Fulfilled self. The hundreds of grass tips, that means just everything. Grass tips is a common Chinese metaphor for all phenomena. The hundreds of grass tips all around never are imposed as my causes and conditioning. It's not about me. We're all in this together. The whole body from head to foot proceeds smoothly. So what is this fulfilled self? Sometimes in Buddhism we hear about no self. Well, that's not exactly it. Of course, each of you sitting on your seat here is a self in your own way, has a self, expresses a self. We each have our particular position in the room from which Buddha in the center sees us, or vice versa. So this fulfilled self, this self-fulfillment, we have a teaching about self-fulfillment samadhi that's related to what Hongzhi is saying here. This way of connecting with all things. So our ego self, the self we hold on to and cherish, our story about ourself, the self that we, that we try and validate, and we want everybody to think how great ourself is, and you know, we all have this idea of ourself, and you know, we all do that. That's part of, you know, I guess we need to develop that self, that ego, just to survive adolescence or something, you know. And our society, you know, encourages us to have this nice, shiny self and have all kinds of credentials, and you know. And it's not that that's, you know, that's okay. But how do we use that self to be part of this fulfilled self? What is he talking about? Then they understand that from within this place, fulfilled self flows out. What is this fulfilled self that has seen how the changes are silenced, has heard that? That has subtly penetrated the original source. That feels each inhale and appreciates the exhale and the space at the end of it. And that then can share itself and respond to situations. So Dogen later says, to carry ourself forward and experience myriad things, that's delusion. And of course we do that. We project ourself onto the world. But he says, when the myriad things come forth and experience themselves, that's awakening. So everything comes forth together. This is, you know, a hint at this fulfilled self. We're all in it together. The whole body from head to foot proceeds smoothly. So I could just keep talking about that paragraph, but I'll say something about the next one too, because it sort of follows. I mean, it does follow. And then I want to leave some time for responses. But he then says, emptiness is without characteristics. Of course, that's what it means. Emptiness is without characteristics. Illumination has no emotional afflictions. With piercing, quietly profound radiance, it mysteriously eliminates all disgrace. When we go beyond holding on to particular qualities or characteristics, when we allow this original source to dispel all our emotional afflictions. First, we have to recognize them, and you know that's part of the work of our practice, is to forgive ourselves for our emotional afflictions, to not be caught by our emotional afflictions. But then this quietly profound radiance mysteriously eliminates all disgrace. We can let go of all of our regrets and feelings of shame and so forth. Thus one can know oneself. Thus the self is completed. So again, this fulfilled self. We all have the clear, wondrously bright field from the beginning. Many lifetimes of misunderstanding come only from distrust, hindrance, and screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation. So, yeah, this is our life. We create scenarios of isolation. We create various ways of seeing ourselves as separate. This is the fundamental affliction of ignorance. We do this. This is our human situation. And we imagine ourselves separate from various other people, various kinds of people, various other, you know, other things in the world. We think we're separate from certain kinds of being. This is how we think. We have to admit this. We have to confess this to ourselves. So, that's a lot of work, yes. But anyway, he says, with boundless wisdom, journey beyond this. Forgetting accomplishments. This is, again, going beyond our personal credentials. Forget accomplishments. Straightforwardly abandon stratagems and take on responsibility. Of course, our ego self has various strategies for how we're going to improve the ego self and improve our situation and improve, you know, this is our way of being in the world. We all do this. Instead, he says, take on responsibility. We have the ability to respond to the world. We have the ability to be helpful rather than harmful. Having turned yourself around, accepting your situation, if you set foot on the path, spiritual energy will marvelously transport you. Contact phenomena with total sincerity. Not a single atom of dust outside yourself. Really, there's nothing outside. Anything that you can see, imagine, connect with, whatever you think is outside of you, Mexicans, Muslims, Republicans, Democrats, if you can imagine it, they're part of you. Contact phenomena with total sincerity. This is Hongzhe's practice instructions. This is challenging. And yet, this is something that's possible. Having turned yourself around, and one instruction for Zazen is take the backward step that turns the light inwardly to illuminate yourself. So part of this practice is turning the light within. So seeing this original source, seeing this process. And then, of course, we have to come back out and graciously share ourselves, respond to situations. So Hongzhe's saying this again and again, this rhythm of practice, turning within, seeing the changes, all silence, just stop. Take some breaths, and then we go back out and respond to the world. Contact phenomena with total sincerity. But right in here, in this last part, there's this place where I would suggest he's talking about what we might call faith, or trust, or confidence. Not faith in some belief or some super being or something, but if you set foot on the path, once we start taking on this practice, spiritual energy will marvelously transport you. Having turned yourself around, accepting your situation, we have to first see we are caught in this situation of stratagems and many lifetimes of misunderstanding, hindrances and screens of confusion that we've created in a scenario of isolation. And yet, we can turn ourselves around. We can start to trust our situation. We can start to open up to this deeper reality. And he says, when we do that, when we set foot on the path, spiritual energy will marvelously transport you. So there's an element of, I don't know if the word faith is actually, works there, because in English we think of that as belief. So I'm not asking you to believe this on faith, but when we start to trust the practice, when we start to trust that just sitting down and facing the wall and facing ourselves, something happens. And then we have this ability to respond. We can take on responsibility. We can actually be helpful in the world, which is the point of all this. For ourselves and all the so-called others we're connected with. So, I wanted to share a little Hongzhe. I've been going back and looking at this wonderful teaching from our 12th century Chinese ancestor. So, comments, responses, reflections, please feel free. Questions. Carla.
Thank you for your talk. It's very thought-provoking.
Good.
And what comes to mind for me is these notions of separateness and connectedness. So when you're in your everyday life and working and all this stuff, you're really kind of in the world of separateness.
Yep.
And it's almost like, in order to function in that world, you have to think in terms of separateness or, and it's a huge effort, at least for me, then, to switch gears and think in terms of connectedness, because you're so caught in the world of like separate beings, and especially like competition and all this stuff, and then to have to think of in terms of connectedness, it's just a huge leap, and it's very difficult to make that transition. And especially like if you're in, say, like a everyday work situation, how do you think of it in terms of this is we're really in an interconnected world, because it's just like so disparate, and so what are your thoughts about that?
Thank you. Yes, that puts the question very well. And what we're doing here in this little storefront temple in Chicago is extremely advanced practice. And we have a couple people who came here for Zazen instruction the first time. So, we're beginners, and we're also doing very advanced practice. In some ways, so this is these teachings that Hongzhe gave were teachings he gave to his monks in his monastery in China. And, there are places where some of us have been, and people can go, where it's the setup is where you residential and you have a chance to be with other people who are just focusing on trying to be this way, and it's wonderful to take some time to do that, but not everybody can do that in their lives. And yet, I think these teachings are maybe even more relevant in the context that most of us are in of being in the world, working in corporate situations where the main context is competitive and, as you say, thinking in terms of separateness. So I don't have answers. Just the questions you ask is the point. But I would say about it, it's not that you have to have two minds, that you're thinking in terms of, you know, connected. You're thinking in terms of the separateness, and then you have this other thought process going on, this connectedness. But still, having the practice background of feeling connectedness, and then having the tools of precepts where we try and be helpful rather than harmful, even in the context of competition and trying to do your job where there is competition involved, or the precept about not speaking of faults of others. How can you be helpful in the situation of competitiveness and not be, you know, blaming others? How do you bring that kind of sensibility, that background sensibility, into taking care of doing your job well? It's challenging. So, and it's not about being perfect. It's not about doing, it's about making mistakes and learning skillful means. It's the Buddhist teaching about this. How do you go into that situation? But still, I know you have this background sense of connectedness, of touching the source, of touching the sense of quietness. And then, okay, here you are in this work situation. So it's, let yourself be challenged by that. Learn by mistakes. Trial and error. Try and be helpful rather than harmful. Try and not be caught up in internal name-calling and blame, even though that's easy and that's going to happen. That's my response. I don't know if that's helpful at all. Yeah, good luck. Other comments, questions, responses? Yes, Brian.
There's a term that's used twice in the text, Buddha spirit and spiritual energy that supports. I wonder if you could say something about that word, either as Hong Shu wrote it in Chinese or coming from the Buddhist tradition.
Spirit?
Yeah. And the way it's used here.
Yeah, I don't think it's talking about spirits like, you know, spirit, you know, like ghosts or spirits wandering around in this room. Although, you know, that, maybe that is relevant sometime, but it's just the spirit of something, like team spirit or something like that. You know, it's just the energy of
spiritual energy.
Yeah, just energy that allows you to have good spirits, spiritual energy. To have a good outlook, to have positive feeling and energy. It's not, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to take it in some mystical sense. I mean, if you want to, you can, but it's not necessary. I think there's some, I don't have the characters with me. I actually dug them out this weekend, but I'm not sure if it's Ray, which is spirit like us, it could be interpreted as like a ghost, but we're gonna be looking at this text in the practice period next spring, and I'll dig out the characters for that. But I think, you know, team spirit is a good way of putting it. Douglas. Well, yeah, you could understand it that way loosely, sure. So citta, bodhicitta means the mind, or there's a character for mind that also means intention and resolve, and those words are part of it too. Yes, Asian.
Back to was thinking about that today with respect to the, giving Zazen instruction and talking about how with Zazen, we're just sitting and allowing ourselves to breathe and being aware of what's happening and being a part of what's happening. But then thinking about how that then gets supported in a different way by doing walking meditation. And then we're feeling ourselves sort of moving around with what's happening. And then thinking about that in terms of, our work practice here. And
yes.
Not cleaning the zendo because the zendo needs cleaning, but cleaning it as part of
good.
Another way of, then going a little bit deeper, getting a little bit more practice and support around bringing our that feeling of connection to our activities. And then I was thinking about, then you go out into the world and you get to practice it for the week and nobody can tell you what it is or, how to do it. But we can come back here on whatever day and get some more, some practice with that. And how, that just unfolds for everybody. That even though I've given Zazen Zazen instruction lots of times, this was the first time I ever thought about it in terms of that progression, too. So, there's always ways in which we're getting support for being more connected with things and then, learning how to bring that to different contexts here and elsewhere.
Good. Thank you very much for that. Yes. So, all of the different forms that we do in the temple are expressions of Zazen. Zazen is a kind of form of expression. We sit not to figure out something. It's not about, it's not some mental exercise. We sit as an expression of Buddha. And walking meditation is a slightly more active. It's not real active. Slightly more active. Very slow meditative walking. A slightly more active way of expressing Buddha, expressing awareness, allowing Buddha to express herself in us. And then we will later on do temple cleaning, which is not about just, utilitarianly kind of cleaning the, getting the temple clean. It's that, but it's also a practice. How do we express our Zazen awareness in that mode? And then when we do our all-day sittings, we eat mindfully in the Zendo, and then how do we bring the food from the, take the food in the spoon and take it to our mouths and chew and, being mindful in all activities. And for the servers, how to bring the food into each person's bowl. And for the people hitting the bells or taking care of the altar or hitting the han outside, all of the temple activities, and it's even more so in a residential kind of temple, are extensions of Zazen, extensions of this practice that Ahongsha is talking about. And so, ultimately then, how to, without, being precious about it or being zenny about it or something, how to, be at your workplace and express your feeling of Zazen in the work that you do and in your interactions with the situation that you're in. That's the challenge of our practice. So thank you for that. Other questions or comments? Yes, Hakusha.
Talking about faith and practice and seeing, maybe other people seeing change in us, we're not seeing it. A lot of my faith and practice, I feel that I can see change in me practicing, I can see change in others. In particular, it seems like the dynamic of my parents' marriage has gotten a lot more healthy during the time of my years of practice. I have some real faith that that's, they seem, it's not just a coincidence. And to some extent, minor extent, it might be me taking some responsibility, when I'm seeing it manifest, I'd rather be like, I don't want to be part of this, to actually be present with them. So I've changed my stance, but it's also, I'm certainly not taking credit for them being sweet and sweet with each other, that my practice progresses, but I it's not a coincidence.
That's very cool. Yeah. We don't always, you know, we don't always know. Part of, you know, Suki Roshi talks about non-gaining attitude. And that's partly that we don't know the outcome of all of our efforts. And sometimes, but sometimes we see them. But sometimes sometimes our efforts and our practice has that kind of outcome that, you know, so Huck shows practice, he thinks, helped his parents. And that, you know, I believe you. And that might happen in lots of cases, and we don't necessarily see it. But that's kind of the point, that just being involved in this process of settling and responding and trying to respond, as Carla was pointing out, and the difficulties of that, but being aware of the difficulties and the effort involved, something happens in the process of, you know, this spirit subtly penetrating the original source and then responding. And it's, we don't always see it. It's not, we don't always know the outcome. It's not, it's kind of organic and alchemical, and sometimes we have a sense of something happening. And even if nothing's happening, maybe it'll happen sometime, you know, later on. We don't know.